Hello, this is News Director Larissa Donovan, and joining me on the phone today for my series of candidate interviews is current Senator and candidate for Senate District 5, Justin Eichhorn. How's it going today, Justin?
Very good. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, it's my pleasure. Maybe before we really get started with the hard and heavy questions, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, such as how long you've lived in the area?
Well, I'm in my first term right now. I was elected for the first time in 2016 to the Minnesota Senate. I was born and raised in Grand Rapids in Itasca County. I've lived here 36 years. I happen to be 36, so I've lived here literally my entire life. I have four young children, and my wife, Brittany, we're also raising in Grand Rapids. I grew up in small business. I grew up in an outdoor store comparable to like a Gander Mountain or a Cabela's. I still am a small business owner. I have a property management business that I still run on outside of the legislature. And after I graduated, I chose to stay in Grand Rapids because I love the area. I love the opportunities that we have here, and I love the lifestyle that we have in Greater Minnesota.
So was your bid for Senate in 2016 your first political campaign?
It was actually my second. I had run for House in 2014 and did pretty good for a first-time candidate, but I lost in 2014 for that House race and then decided to give it another go in 2016 to run for the Senate after being called to do so by friends and neighbors of mine throughout the entire district, whether it's Grand Rapids, Bemidji, Walker, throughout the whole district. People said, you know, we need somebody like you to run, and was strongly encouraged from folks throughout the district and throughout the state. And, you know, after much prayer and consideration with my wife, you know, we decided to give it one more try. And certainly at this point, I'm happy we did.
And are there any other roles in the Grand Rapids community that you serve, or maybe Senate committees you sit on?
So the Senate committees I sit on, I'm the vice chair of our Jobs and Economic Growth Committee. In 2017 and 18, I was the vice chair of our K-12, we call it E-12 for early childhood education, policy committee. I was the vice chair of that in 2019 and 20. Those two committees got rolled together into the K-12 committee that did policy and finance, which I still serve on. I'm on the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Committee, Capital Investment or Bonding Committee, as some folks refer to it as. That committee would be the committee that funded the Bemidji Veterans Home, the Hague Sauer Building at BSU, that kind of stuff. I'm on the Aging and Long-Term Care Committee, which is a really interesting committee, and we were kind of a leader in the country to have a committee like that at the state level. I also serve on the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board, also called IRRRB. That's more important, obviously, to the Grand Rapids side of the district. And then our School Trust Lands Commission, I also serve on that.
All right. Well, that's quite a list. So my next question is, what are some of your proudest accomplishments over the past 4 years serving in the Senate?
Well, I think we've done a lot of things. I don't know if there's one specific thing I could say I'd be the most proud of. I could say one of the most talked about things. A couple. Again, the list is pretty long.
Right.
I'm very proud that we finally got the Veterans Home across the finish line. I know that had been, you know, the Bemidji area had been trying for, you know, almost 10 years to get that done, and we were finally able to get that across the finish line. I would say that was probably one of my most proud accomplishments. But other things like getting firearm safety and hunter safety education back into schools, that was a really interesting bill that people from all sides of political spectrums really loved. And what it did was it took, I saw Iowa had started requiring school districts to do firearm safety as part of the FIED curriculum in their classes. And I thought, well, we're not going to get that here, but how can we take that, turn it into a Minnesota solution and provide that for Minnesota students? So we did not make it mandatory, but we made it available for all schools. They could contract with the DNR, have a DNR individual come in, teach firearm safety, hunter safety, archery, basically anything you'd want to do in the outdoors, and give that education to our young folks. And then we also included the tribes a part of it. We wanted to do the history and culture of hunting in Minnesota, so we directed the DNR to work with all of the tribes throughout the state to make sure that the importance of hunting in their culture was also taught. So I thought that was a pretty cool thing and brought a lot of people together.
Oh, wow, I hadn't even heard about that one.
Yep.
But I suppose there's a lot of stuff you guys do in the state that might not get all the attention it might need. But my next question is, what are some of the key issues your constituents have discussed with you along this campaign trail?
So if you want to talk about the last 4 years, it's different than right now. Typically, what I've seen as I have been out campaigning in previous years, and, you know, I'd still go out and talk to folks in a non-election year, and people are concerned about their Second Amendment rights, they're concerned about life issues, they're concerned about union issues. But in this campaign cycle, the number one thing I continue to hear is make sure the police are not defunded. We don't want the crazy stuff going on in Minneapolis and St. Paul to come north. So that is the number one issue by far. For a while, we were hearing about school districts. People wanted their kids back in school. The governor did make the right decision by allowing local school districts to make that decision. But the top issue was related around police so far this campaign cycle.
Okay. My next question's a bit open-ended, so bear with me here. Take all the time you need. But it's a little philosophical. What sort of values do you have that guide you in your decision-making?
Well, I think you can sum it up kind of easily, but it's more broad than that. And I know we don't have enough time to have that full discussion, but quite simply, faith, family, and freedom would sum up where my value system comes from. You know, I kind of ran because I have, you know, four young children that, you know, I want them to have a better future than I had, of course, and I want that for all Minnesota children. But as I graduated high school from the Grand Rapids High School, I watched all my friends leave because there wasn't the opportunities here that there were in metro areas, and jobs were continuing to leave the area because of bad policies by, you know, metro politicians, and I wanted to help change it. I think we've done some good work changing that. But most importantly, I'm guided by my faith, then family, and then the freedoms that were all guaranteed in the Minnesota and the United States Constitution.
All right. My next question is your thoughts on COVID-19 response. What do you think of what the state's been doing so far, and what do you think should be done moving forward?
It's kind of turned into a mess, I think, at this point. I think to start out with, you know, you don't know what you don't know until you know it. You know, so as a legislature, we included $547 million in funding to prepare hospitals, clinics, nursing homes for a potential surge in COVID-19 cases. Sorry, an alarm went off on the phone.
No worries.
So anyway, we were preparing the state for that with that $547 million. The money was used to purchase personal protective equipment, to renovate rooms into specialty care rooms that hospitals could use, purchase life-saving equipment. It also provided resources for small business and college students and veterans and for Second Harvest Food Bank. I think all that stuff is important. We need to continue down that path, but I think we need to start having a discussion now that we know that COVID-19 isn't the emergency we first thought it was, to have a discussion. And I think we're already starting to do that as Governor Walz has to call us back in every 30 days. How does the legislature get to become involved again? That's another area I hear quite a bit about, more on the official side than the campaign side, that, you know, people want the governor and the legislature to work together. And unfortunately, Walz has kind of taken it a go-it-alone approach to this point. Maybe it's because it's an election cycle or whatever, but people want the legislature to be involved. I mean, you know, we're their elected officials more at the local or level, and that's what I would really like to see. Bring the legislature back in. Let's make these decisions together so we can decide together what's best for the state. You know, there's certainly going to be some back and forth. The House is Democrat. The Senate is Republican. But on issues like COVID, that's so important that we do the right thing and don't end up with unintended consequences, that we find a way where we have to come to the middle.
All right. Well, my last question today is on child care. It's becoming incredibly difficult to find in this area, especially for infants. And it seems like the child care issue is being exacerbated in light of the COVID-19 pandemic. I know mine closed. What are your ideas on how to address access to child care?
So as far as child care goes, I mean, we have an access and an availability problem in greater Minnesota. We have done some tours throughout the state, listening sessions, talking to both centers and home providers. One of the biggest things we hear is that government bureaucracy has created a lot of the problem we're in currently that makes it difficult for people to either go into childcare or continue to do childcare. We're continuing those discussions. There is a task force still in place. COVID certainly took a hit to that because it couldn't go on the road and continue to listen to folks as we've dealt with that. But I'm finding, you know, funding mechanisms to help folks out. I would hate to see government be, you know, a bigger part of the solution other than in funding. I would love to see some of these local providers be able to come back, but also provide them with the tools they need. Our state agencies have taken the stick instead of the carrot approach, and I think the carrot approach is better. Working with the providers, making sure that their needs are understood and that we have a reasonable framework so that kids are safe and providers can continue to provide. Again, you know, it's a very difficult issue, but it's something we continue to work on, just like a lot of other issues. Just like in the healthcare realm and mental health specifically, you know, we're not going to get it perfect in year one, but we're going to need to keep taking those positive steps towards making it better. And I'll continue to work on that, especially in my committees, you know, serving on the Aging and Long-Term Care Committee. That committee also deals with child care as well, and that just got picked up for 2019. So obviously with COVID, we didn't get a lot of chance to discuss it, but we will going forward have larger discussions about childcare and how we can make things better on that committee. And with a loved one in long-term care and with young children, that's a committee I definitely want to continue to serve on going forward.
All right, Senator Eichhorn. Well, that takes care of my prepared questions. Thank you so much for taking the time to respond to them. Justin Eichhorn for Senate District 5.